Arias Medical Group is a leading healthcare staffing agency offering full-time travel and direct hire career opportunities for physical therapists nationwide. An exciting career is waiting for you. Dream it and live it with Arias. To learn more, call 1-800-340-2619.
The first round is on Owen's Recovery Science. Owen's Recovery Science is a single source
for PTs,
OTs,
ATCs,
DCs,
and other medical professionals
seeking certification
in personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training. Find out more and get certified
at owensrecoveryscience.com.
Had a great opportunity to head out to Utica College to do a PT Pintcast live tour. Want to thank the faculty and staff and, of course, the students at Utica College for letting us up there. Got a chance to get two episodes out of it. So here's the second episode on PT Pintcast live from Utica.
The best conversations happen at happy hour.
Come on.
Welcome to ours. This is the PT Pintcast.
Gotta go hard or go home.
Here's your host, physical therapist Jimmy McKay.
Here we go. Our next guest has been an assistant professor of PT here at Utica College since 2009. He teaches courses related to the management of musculoskeletal conditions. He got his DPT from Utica College. Also went on, and he's got his OCS involved in research related to injury prevention for athletes and return to play screening. He remains active in clinical practice, focusing on orthopedic pathology with a particular interest in the shoulder. Welcome to PT Pintcast, David Schilling. You have like a posse. They are very excited.
Yeah, they don't seem to respond the same when we have tests. So I don't know.
They're like ducking out when there's... mentioned in your intro, overhead athletes.
Yes.
Very, very mobile joint, that shoulder, and we find a lot of injuries. So how'd you get into kind of specializing in something like that?
Actually, it started with my participation in sports. So I had some shoulder injuries over the years. I was a competitive swimmer for 15 years and had some shoulder problems.
Yeah. Oh, I'm a swimmer. I just got super excited. Sorry. I thought the crowd would just back me up on that. Swimmers. What'd you swim?
I was a butterfly.
Yeah. No idea. So. I could do like a 20-yard butterfly. I can't make it to the other wall, but the other three I like more. But good for you. And you, how tall are you?
I'm about 6'4".
You got a wing. Put out your wingspan, man. Yeah. When you were circle swimming in practice and you're doing fly, I bet your other teammates were just, I duck.
Yeah, just take a few heads off.
Yeah. Cool. So you did the swimming, and of course, with repetition and intensity for overhead athletes like swimmers, you're going to have some shoulder issues.
Yes. Yeah.
And then where did it go from there? Where did it progress? Were you still a swimmer when you knew you were going to be a PT, or was this chicken and the egg?
My shoulder injuries actually happened when I was in college, so I was already in PT school. But it kind of helped solidify the ideas that I wanted to work with orthopedic patients. Ironically, when I got into PT school, I wanted to be a pediatric therapist.
Yeah, it's here for PTs.
So you really do never know where you're going to end up. So, you know, your experiences and your life experiences, as well as the experiences you have on clinicals and then, you know, with patients along the way, really, I think, help drive your career. And those are paths you never really can completely anticipate.
Yeah, and the other cool thing is when you get a license to be a PT, you don't need a license to be a pediatric PT or neuro PT. You're PT, and you can switch it up kind of whenever you want. Any particular sports that you like to focus on now besides swimming in terms of treating and looking into overhead injuries?
We've been doing some research here on campus with swimmers, but we've also been focusing on overhead throwing athletes, you know, because of some of the injuries that they're sustaining. So we've been working a lot with the softball and baseball teams here on campus. You know, it's a great subject pool of convenience. They're right here, and they enjoy working with us and getting something out of that. So we've been doing some research on injury prevention in those groups.
Focused on?
We're actually focusing more on the screening process. So how do we identify and can we predict those individuals in the preseason who get hurt? So working on the side of how do we keep our athletes safe on the field and doing what they love to do instead of having to rehab. Yeah. So
how do we do that? And can you help me with my fantasy football team? Because I keep drafting quarterbacks who get hurt.
Well, we thought the answer would be easier. You know, we looked at specific impairments that we thought would be really easily predictive, and we find that it's, and as the research is coming out, it's a lot more complex than that. because of the interaction with, especially with a shoulder girdle, with so many, with the interaction of so many things, you know, including strength ratios, flexibility issues, coordination and movement patterns, and then the overall repetitions that they actually do. It's not as easy to do this as we thought. You know, so we've been involved in some longitudinal studies now, and we're still piecing it together.
If it were super easy, though, you'd run out of stuff to do, right? So this is great.
Yeah, and then we'd have no more research to do. No. There's always more to learn, and what I found with research is that one question leads to 20 questions. Yeah. You know, and as you try to answer one, the avenues of different research possibilities actually kind of keep increasing. You know, and so my problem, and my research partners are always telling me, Dave, you have too many questions, and we don't have enough time to answer all of those yet. So, but that's the luxury of, you know, of being in academia, is we get some time to focus on research, which when I was a clinician 100% of the time, I said, well, there's no time to do this, but we do get some time to carve that out. Not that that's easy, but it's, you know, one of the things that we have the opportunity, and what I've always been trying to do is keep asking those clinician friends to say, hey, do you want to get involved with research with me? And they come kicking and screaming sometimes. So.
Yeah, sure you drag. So you're in an interesting position because you're doing research, you're still involved in clinical practice, and you're in education. How do you get that all together in your lessons? How do you sort of foster evidence-based clinical decision-making through teaching learning methods in the classroom?
Well, you know, one of the reasons I've you know continued to practice is because I like to try to bring clinical experiences into the classroom. So I try to as much as I can to try to talk about patients that I'm working with at the time. You know, if it's relevant to the task at hand or the activity that we're doing, I think it tries to help bring real life experiences to what's going on when you're teaching theory and you're teaching things that maybe not as quite as interesting. But if you can talk about a patient experience or you can bring in some of those stories, I think it tries to make it a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, keep in mind, all those things on the tests that you take, eventually they're going to be humans that you'll have to touch. And they're going to want to move in ways that are very, very different. So make sure that you remember there's a human on the other end of that story eventually. The end of the rainbow. And a PT school is a rainbow. Don't worry, it's coming. There's a pot of gold. And by gold, I mean you have to give someone your money. Engaging students. We got a bunch of engaged students here, right? Well, I talk about engaging students. You guys had that like down. Like you stopped the woo at the exact same time. Choreograph, well done. I'm sure you had something to do with that.
Years of training. Yeah.
How talk about like you know experiential learning opportunities promoting professional behavior. What sort of things do you see work best?
Well, we've been taking groups of students and getting them involved in this case, it kind of ties into the injury prevention, doing screens for athletes. In this case, we've been working with students who've had ACL reconstructions and they're heading back to sport, either recently or in the past. And so we have groups of students that are actually helping us with some of the screening process. So what we found is that when you engage them in the actual learning activity and it has an outcome with a student, when it has an outcome with an athlete, that engagement changes, you know, and it changes some of the way that they're behaving. It changes some of the way that they're looking at the coursework that they're doing and how they're applying that information to real life individuals. And oftentimes we found that when they're working with peers, it really changes how they relate to one another.
I mean, how?
Well, when you have to talk to your peer who doesn't know anything, and this may be an athlete that they know, but you have to tell them how they're going to do a test and how they're going to be participating in the screening process or doing this examination, you can see that they have to immediately switch gears. And when they do that often in the classroom, it's more challenging because they both know exactly what they're talking about because they sat through the same lecture. But when they have to talk to somebody about that same thing that doesn't really know much about that, you know, they have to explain it differently and they have to act in a research role or a professional role that I think helps to develop some of those professional behaviors, and doing that, you know, throughout their curriculum in various ways that we've, you know, derived in our curriculum at places like the Senior Center, but also in research opportunities, also out on clinical education, obviously, then, you know, that development has to happen kind of in a stepwise fashion.
It's also good because it makes them hone something I like to focus on, which is their communication skills. Because sure. Using the biggest word that you paid a lot of money for isn't always the best word to use.
No,
you don't get to charge by the syllable. I promise. It would be nice though. That'd be a weird way to code. But that's great. I mean, I noticed that we got to do some screens during my PT education at Marymount University, and it was good knowing that the other person didn't know as much. Because when I was, you know, with practicals with professors, it's nerve-wracking because you're like, the professor knows everything. Am I doing it wrong? I'm doing it wrong. Am I doing it wrong? I'm doing it wrong now. I'm doing it wrong, aren't I? That's the thing I'm thinking the whole time.
Definitely doing it right.
But the other person, when you're working with like a student athlete, they're like, dude, just whatever. And you're like, okay. So it's like a great way. It's a great patient-based to learn on because you're not focused on the failure. At least I wasn't. It was like, hey, they know less than me. Finally, somebody who knows less than me. Great. I get to show them something. So that's a great, yep, unique opportunity that you guys have here. That's pretty cool. What makes Utica special? What do you like about it?
Utica the city or Utica College?
I'll just, whatever.
We're just going everywhere. All right.
Let's go big to small. Let's go big to Utica, small. The 10th most populated city in New York State.
They do have really good food here.
Okay.
So if you really like Italian food, this is the place. We were on the Food Network.
What?
Can you believe that? Yeah.
Dick Clark, Annette Funicello, and the Food Network?
We were on the Food Network. Yes. The food here is great. If you like snow, we have a lot of that.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, so if you like, you know, participating in outdoor activities, we also have the Adirondacks straight to the north, yep, of us. So this is a great
Saranac
place.
Saranac beer is not far
and
away.
And we have a big brewery here. So yeah, you can go down and take a brewery tour and have a few beers.
You know, you're with PT students when you mention like outdoor activities and snow and this and that brewery, then they clap. Mm. Boom, you found yourself a PT student. Yeah. And then now let's get real micro.
Yeah.
You know, what's unique and what's something that you can say about Utica College?
I went to school here. I did my undergraduate, my graduate work here. I came back to teach here. And I think what drove a lot of that was the sense of family and the group of professionals that work here, not just in the PT department, but as a whole, really have the student as their focus. You know, and when you kind of experience that as a student, and then you're able to kind of, you know, take the role of an instructor and be able to kind of do that on the other side and continue that process, because we are a smaller institution and we have, you know, fairly low student-to-teacher ratios here. And I think that makes a big difference. You know, we have got a lot of great students, which we all appreciate, you know, the quality of students that we have, and we get the luxury of taking them and helping them to get to their career path.
Yeah, you can clap for that. That's good. Now, I'm a little biased toward, you know, smaller upstate New York, you know, undergrad locations. I went to a small, you know, upstate New York, St. Bonaventure School, and I liked that. That was like the thing that appealed to me was very, very drastically different than going to a gigantic school. I felt a little lost on visits, but you come to some place like this, and literally I pulled on campus a couple hours ago here at Utica, and it was like, oh yeah, I've had this feeling before. This is similar to other small campuses, and small isn't a negative term. It's not. You know, it's something that you know, serves, as you said, the individual student.
Absolutely.
And you must have liked it because you're like a repeat customer. Do you get like a percentage off or something?
Free parking? It's either they couldn't get rid of me or I got sucked back in. I don't know which way it is.
Yeah, couldn't leave. All right, you ready to do your shot?
Sure.
Here we go. Parting shot of wisdom.
This is the parting shot.
Powered by Optum Manual Therapy.
Taking the orthopedic clinical specialty examination? To pass the OCS, it's important to understand clinical prediction rules, clinical practice guidelines, and recent research. Optum Manual Therapy has the premier OCS prep course that gets you from start to passing step by step.
Test out 3 free study guides right now at OptumFellowship.com.
If you were to leave the audience listening right now with one piece of advice, one pearl of wisdom, what do you got for them?
I guess we started kind of a trend here now, right? So specificity.
Okay.
Oh.
If you quiz me with spin and stout right now, I'm going to freak
no.
out.
No.
Because...
The other specificity, because that statistic stuff is not my thing.
Okay, no. Good. Because I got real
specificity
sweaty.
Of training, right?
Okay, good. I like that one.
You know, when we work with athletes, you know, we can't just say, hey, you could do TheraBand like this, and you do great, and you're going to be great on the field. You have to try to train individuals to the activities they're going to be doing. So if you don't focus on the specificity of training and identify the key characteristics of their program that are going to be realistic to getting them back to what they need to do on the field, then you're missing the boat.
I dig the specificity thing. You know, I just heard a quote the other day, and is, you know, it's the same thing kind of said different ways, and for some reason some quotes just resonate with you when they're said by people, and it was, we typically get injured in the ways we move or the planes that we don't train in. So making sure that you're doing the thing you're going to do at a really high level, preferably maybe start with TheraBand, but maybe something a little heavier down the road if you're going to be doing that is a great parting shot. Let's hear it for this guy right here.
Excellent.
David, thank you. All right, coming up next, we got our fourth guest this afternoon. It's PT Pinecast live at Utica College.
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and now Snapchat.
At PT Pinecast.
And online at ptpinecast.com.
All right, this is going well. I haven't been thrown off stage yet. Yeah, you guys have been a great audience. And I want you guys to say hi to Maddie. Maddie is with Arius Medical Staffing. Quite simply, you find PTs jobs.
Exactly, 100%.
Where do you find these people jobs?
Good question. So Arius Medical staffs nationwide, all 50 states, Alaska and Hawaii included. So really, wherever they want to go, we can hopefully find them a PT job.
All right, show of hands, first-year students in the audience. Okay, ooh, yeah, mostly in the back. Good, because they're hiding. Second-year students and third-year students. Third year in the front, second. Not plan. Was there a seating chart that I missed? Well done, students. Good. When should someone start thinking, I'm looking for a job and I want to go somewhere? Like, at what point in their 3 years of PT school? Because as long as PT school is 3 years, it starts to go by faster and faster. So when should they start looking?
I mean, really, it's never too early to start thinking about your job search and kind of get an idea of what you're wanting to do. But definitely, as you're getting closer to that third year, to really dive into what is important to you, what you're looking to get out of after graduation, and kind of narrow down your options or widen up your options if you really are super flexible. So never too early, but definitely at that third year, start to give it some serious thought.
So you could be like, hey, I want to do whatever setting, and I want to go to Colorado. You can just spin the dial on the setting and spin the dial on the state. It lands in Colorado, and I can tell you kind of where I want to go, and you'll just go look for a job for me?
Yeah. Yep. So the flexibility is really all in your hands. So you really tell us where you want to go, what setting you want to be in, and then we'll in turn talk to our account managers and see what they have available for new grads that will make it a smooth transition from school into your first position. So you have the say completely. We'll just make sure that we have something that's new grad friendly in the area.
Okay, so here's the big question. How much does this cost for me if I want you to find me a job?
Yes, it is completely free. So from start to finish with Student Outreach and Arius, whether you're first year, second year, or third year, just chatting with us and getting some feedback is completely free. Or if we go all the way and help you find that first position, no money is exchanged. We get paid from the facility. So the entire process is free for students.
That's cool. Right? We like free, right? Big fan. And real quick, you go from travel assignment, and if you like where you are, you can find us that permanent job, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yep, you can take your travel assignment and turn it into a permanent position if the facility has the option, which is definitely something we see a lot with students, is that they'll try a couple different travel opportunities, crisscross around the United States, find place that they want to kind of plant their roots, and then you can turn that into a permanent position. So tons of flexibility with it. You really don't have to settle into one thing or another right after graduation. You can test some things out before you make that final decision.
Website, where do I find the info? What about Google Eyes to find you?
ariusmedical.com, and then...
Spell it, though, because Arius is like, spell it.
Sure, A-U-R-E-U-S medical.com.
There we go. Let's hear for Maddie, the travel expert. Let's hear for Arius one more time for bringing the show out. Thank you, Maddie.
The PT Pinecast is powered by Smart Tools, the next generation of instrument-assisted soft tissue mobilization. The fastest-growing approach to IASTM is Smart Tools, from high-quality American-made tools. Smart Tools. Find them online at smarttoolsplus.com. Our home on the internet.
PTPinecast.com.
Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com.
Let's give a nice, warm welcome to...
We're back. It's so great to see you. Let's get back to the show now. All right, here we go. Our next guest on PT Pinecast had their BA in biological anthropology. I have no idea what that means. From the University of Buffalo, master's in DPT from Temple University in Philly. Current clinical practice at the Mohawk Valley Health System Hospital, acute rehab, subacute rehab, emergency department. That is a lot of sections right there. Also vice president of the Academy of Acute Care Physical Therapy in her second term. On the show, Molly Hickey. Let's hear for Molly.
Howdy.
Molly, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having us. I think we're just about out of time, though.
Yeah, Molly's the person that we set this up. How did we cross paths?
We actually crossed paths for some of those young ladies there in the front row who accosted you at the next conference. We started talking about, or they started talking to you with Jim Smith, who I think is in the audience there too, about doing a campus tour because they're avid listeners of the Pinecast, and they said, you got to come on tour.
Thank you. It's you guys listening plus my mom. That's it.
So
kudos to you for helping me facilitate this and getting this cool Strable Auditorium. And we're gonna do the after party, right?
We are.
What do you want to talk about?
We've made some specially crafted pint glasses that are gonna be for sale.
You guys made your own pint glasses
at the back of the auditorium after we finish. They're $10, and for that $10 in that pint glass, you get a first free beverage. And then the beverage refills in those glasses will be $2 for the rest of the night. So,
So you get a pint glass, first beer, double the price, second one free.
There you go.
That's it. It took a second, but they got it. I like that. What's the funds going to? What do you guys?
Well, we raise money all year, and we do a lot of service activities in the Mohawk Valley. We just did a couple of Thanksgiving baskets for Hope House, which is a local community. We're going to be putting some funds together for the VCU Marquette Challenge.
Yeah, it's here for the challenge.
For the foundation. We're on the list every year.
Good.
You know, we try to bring speakers to campus. We try to put it back into the educational unit, and so we try to, you know, save some, spend some, give some.
Good. Drink some. Do the fourth one. Drink some.
There you go.
Just some, not all of it. Let's hear it for that. We'll do the fundraiser up afterwards. So thank you for doing that. Thanks for having us out.
Sure.
Cute Care, you got a leadership role within the APTA. Talk about that. What led you to go to a leadership role, because that's a lot of work.
It is. I actually was, I would say, indoctrinated very early. I never planned, like a lot of these people, to go into acute care. If you had told me when I was a student that that was what I was going to do, I would have said, you're smoking crack.
Whoa.
I escalated quickly. You know, that was it. There was just no way. I'll tell you, I got a taste of academic medicine. First of all, I went to the most incredible sports medicine clinical, because that's what I thought I wanted to do. And by about the first week, I knew that you couldn't pay me enough money to do that.
A week.
And I was working with the Philadelphia 76ers, the Philadelphia Phillies, the Eagles. I had the Atlantic 10 athletes, you know, Temple, LaSalle, all those athletes, plus regular people off the street with, and you could not pay me enough money to do that. Sorry, Dave. not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just that
it was, I just couldn't.
And so then I scored an academic medicine rotation at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital, and it was the first day that I knew. I was like, oh my God.
What was the moment?
I found my people.
What was the moment, kind of similar to how Gabby said it?
You
what
know,
was yours?
I think, it's hard to say. I think I walked in and I was surrounded by a medical staff that treated me as a peer, even though I was a student, from the get-go. And there was a level of inquiry and a level of patient care that rose to this degree that I had never encountered before. And I was hooked immediately by the teamwork, the collegiality, the academic nature of how we solve clinical problems, the interaction with the patients, and just the whole atmosphere of having residents and people in training all around me. It was Grey's Anatomy, totally.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, without, you know, the crazy stuff. Actually, there was some of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I loved it, and I was hooked, absolutely hooked.
That's got to feel good. Because I'm sure after that first week at the place that you were definitely, the setting you were definitely 100% going to do your thing at, there had to be that, oh, expletive moment, what am I going to do now?
Well, when I was in the sports medicine,
yeah, so
I thought I'd chosen the wrong career. I was like, oh my God, I've just spent all this time. It took me 3 years to get into PT school. That's how I ended up with a side degree in biological anthropology at Buffalo. I couldn't get into the PT program. I was told, as a matter of fact, that it would be an exercise in futility for me to continue to try to be a PT. It was never going to happen. I thought, oh, this is great. I've spent all this time, and now I hate this. And I was pretty freaked out for a while. I really was. I was like, what am I going to do? And I think, you know, I just kind of wrote it out. And by fortune, one of my faculty members was Mary Sinnott, and she's taught cardiovascular physical therapy to us at Temple. And as soon as she walked in the door and started talking about cardiopulmonary physical therapy and how things are managed, I said, I want to go work with her. I was able to arrange a clinical there. And first she said, over my dead body, will you come? But anyway, that's another story for another day. But I went, and then they offered me a job. You know, I went to Duke University for another clinical. And while I was at Duke, they called me and said, you want to interview? You're going to be finishing soon. And I drove back to Philly, and I interviewed, and I took the job. And that was the end of it.
Yeah, let's hear it for that story. I love that. So, I love stories like that.
So you asked me how I got involved in leadership, and it was because of Mary Sinnott, really. She was the then vice president also of the acute care section, and she immediately roped me in to getting involved with the education committee and program chair work. And I ended up staying in that position for almost, well, about a decade, doing educational programming for the acute care section, and it just grew from there. I try to tell my students, Jim does, we all do, you get involved in service-oriented activities with the American Physical Therapy Association, and you're there. You know, it just kind of evolved from there.
That's awesome. So, I love people who do stuff like that. Thank you for doing stuff like that. Wow. I also like, you know, your story where it's okay. I mean, we were talking with some students, you know, before they came in, it's okay not to know. And I think hearing that story amongst others, and it's good to know that because this field is so broad, it's so wide, you literally could MacGyver anything you want. Because if, like you said, you know, if you move, you're an athlete, right? That's what we said. If you move, you're an athlete, period. If you are moving, there's a place for you. If you're not moving, there's a place for you. If you're moving not quite how you want, there's a place for you. So good on you for, well, and you panicked, but that's normal. That's normal.
I did.
Normal.
Oof.
But there's going to be something. You just got to ride it out, right?
Yep, just gritted it out.
That's hard to hear. You want to just know the answer because we're used to that as PT students. Yeah. I want the answer right now.
Yep.
But good on you for having that moment. I hear we have a connection. I just started a new job at Fox Rehabilitation.
That is so funny.
We do PT house calls for older adults right now in 15 states. And it was founded by a guy by the name of Tim Fox. And you know Tim.
I do know Tim. Tim was one of my early students when I was a young physical therapist at Jefferson. He came through as a student, and you know, and then we hired him because we loved him. And then he was assigned to work with me in trauma and critical care at Jefferson. And so we had quite a fun time.
Tim doesn't like to call himself the boss. He likes to call it, you know, we're colleagues, but. How was Tim as a student? I mean, let's get that story. What do you think?
Well,
how
listen, was he? He's going to listen to this. No, Tim was a fantastic student, or else we wouldn't have hired him. You know, people, you know, at Jefferson, I have to say this, you know, students didn't always make it all the way through their clinicals. We had no problem saying, not going to work. So if he made it through, then that was okay. So he was great.
He kind of kept going. He's done some things.
He did. He really had a vision and a drive and a desire to do what he's doing. That whole bringing the meaning back to house calls and giving not just your regular cookie cutter, do some quad sets, make sure you can walk around the house. He's comprehensive, full rehab care at home. And that was a different concept than what most people were doing and still are doing.
Yeah, cookie cutter and Tim Fox.
Doesn't work.
If you, not because I now work for the guy, but because I now work for the guy, because I bought, you know, I said, I'm in, whatever you, like, listen to that for, like, listen to his episode on my show, interviewed him at CSM last year. Mm-hmm. It was 8:00 in the morning in San Antonio time. He's in fifth gear from the moment he hits the ground. So
absolutely.
I was trying to be, like, professional, because I just graduated. I was like, oh, would you like me to get you some coffee for the interview? And he's like, thought we were having a beer, let's go. And I'm like, I want to work for that guy.
Yeah.
Because then he followed it with just passionate, you know, conversation about what he wanted to do. And his thing is, I want to abolish ageism. And that is a, well, I call it a BHAG, your big, hairy, audacious
you know,
goal. And
that's it's funny that you say that. I'm sorry to cut you off. One of his patients early on that I remember distinctly was a guy who was 100 years old. And back then, that was fairly rare. Not anymore. People were basically writing this guy off. I even remember the guy's name, but I can't tell you because,
you know,
HIPAA. But I can hear Tim saying his name. We were sitting there arguing about what we should do. And he was like, absolutely. We've got to work with this guy.
He thinks that everybody's got an opportunity to do what they once thought impossible, or even other people, as we talked about, what other people thought was impossible for them. And he employs that, and he, you know, brings that fire to his clinicians. That's why I started working for him anyway. So it's just weird that we had that weird connection.
I know. And you're right. People aren't moving enough, especially in acute care hospitals, still to this day.
Yeah. And we're living longer. So let's move along. My grandmother, 92, kickboxing and Tai Chi.
Nice.
Like, don't try to mug my granny because she will make you look bad.
Right.
So why do you stick around doing that second tour of duty with the, now it's the Academy of Acute
Care?
Well,
we've had a long and winding road of trying to elevate acute care physical therapy as a specialty area, as something that's not just getting people out of bed and walking them down the hall and saying, okay, they're safe to go home. There's a lot more to it. It's that clinical medicine piece that I fell in love with when I first went in to academic medicine, taking every single piece of your education and using it to formulate a prognosis and a plan of care, and really looking at somebody and planning that out and plotting it out, having to understand what the medical implications are, the surgical implications, other types of adjuvant treatments, and how that's going to influence somebody's ability to recover.
What you know, not to bring Tim back up, but what Tim does is, I want you practicing at the top of your
license. Absolutely.
I mean, that's what you're explaining to me is...
He learned that from me.
Yeah, okay. I'll let him know.
We use that phrase all the time. You need to practice at the maximum level of your license.
Clinical excellence. Because we fought for it. We fought for all these things within our scope of practice. If we don't use them, that's on us.
That line that you're not supposed to cross, we need to go right up to it. And we need to step on it once in a while.
Ooh, I like that. Step on the line. Last question I'll ask. Last thing I want to bring up. Future clinical education for entry-level physical therapists. What's that mean to you?
Well, I'm intrigued by this because for many, many years, I have been a fierce, fierce proponent that every single student needs to do a hospital clinical rotation or something that involves facility-based practice as in their training, because I know how different that clinical reasoning process is, and I feel like it transcends all other areas of practice. I just do. And so, you know, that's getting harder and harder. People are having a harder time getting into acute care rotations. Students don't know about it, just like I didn't know about it.
Right. And change your career.
So what are you going to do to really prepare people who think they want to go into a certain area and they miss that opportunity? There's a movement underway to reconstruct clinical education and to look at PT preparation differently. And I've started to come around to some of the ideas that are being proposed in terms of mandatory residencies, stage licensure, and things like that. And I'm starting to ask myself the question, should we force every student to go through every single type of clinical environment? One of the things you brought up is very true. We have a license to practice, which means we can do whatever we want. That might not be the best thing anymore. Sure. Because it's too complex.
That scope is getting big.
We keep adding and adding and adding to DPT degrees, right? We keep adding and adding and adding, asking you guys to know more and more and more and more, adding more and more, so that we can create these generalists that can go into any of these places. But I think we all know that even with that, you're still not prepared in any one real area to thrive. You still need time. So is it okay for me to say, gee, Sue, I think I might want to go teach some kids tomorrow. Do you need a contractor? I've got some time. Probably not such a good idea. Just like it's not such a good idea when people, you know, waltz into the hospital and say, hey, I'm doing a little contract work. And they don't really know how to handle somebody who's critically ill.
That's a good point.
You know, and so I think we really need to examine that as a profession and think about alternative ways that we can prepare students to have the opportunity to do what they want without necessarily forcing people through a long period of time through all these different venues.
Because they've got a lot of stuff
because
going already, right?
Because listen,
got a couple things. Yeah.
I knew in a week that I didn't want to be in that clinical. How much time could I have spent doing something else that I was really passionate about if I had had the opportunity to learn that earlier in my education?
Like a smorgasbord.
Correct.
Line it up.
So I think looking at PT education and trying to expose students earlier in the game to these things during their didactic portion of preparation may be a way to go so that we can start aligning people toward things that they're most proficient at or really want to do. It's a difficult question, and
sure.
I'm not entirely...
I like the fact that you're
asking
it.
I'm not set in any way yet. You know, I think we need to ask the question.
Okay. Got a lot of questions, don't we?
Yeah.
The more we have questions, the more we have more questions. You ready for your shot?
Sure.
All right.
This is The Parting Shot.
Powered by Optum.
Optum Manual Therapy offers a certification in orthopedic manual therapy and a manual therapy fellowship program.
Now with locations in Dallas,
San Antonio,
Houston,
Scottsdale,
and St. Louis.
If you want to be a certified orthopedic manual therapist or complete a fellowship in manual therapy,
visit them at OptumFellowship.com.
Parting shot of wisdom. What do you got for everybody?
It has to do with that line that I mentioned. And what I tell my students is that if you haven't almost about gotten into trouble in your workday, you haven't had a good day. You need to challenge the status quo. Do not assimilate. Do not assimilate. Rules are there, but you have to question them once in a while.
I like how she pauses. Rules are there.
You have to question them once in a while. I get in big trouble from my faculty colleagues for saying this. I get red cards left and right for saying this. Red cards.
What are red cards?
Oh, well, we have a little system in place now for providing feedback for on professional behaviors. We have, it's like a stop sign.
Yeah.
Or a stoplight. We have red cards and yellow cards and green cards. Yeah.
So you're kind of like, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. So, you know, push it a little bit.
Well, not always.
Okay.
All I'm saying is that there's, you know, going from academic medicine in the fifth largest city in the United States,
yeah,
in Philadelphia, and coming to a rural upstate New York that is the, what,
10th largest, largest city in the state.
And being in rural medicine and seeing, you have to challenge things because a lot of things are being done because that's the way they've always been done. And if we're going to influence practice, if we're going to change things, we have to be the ball. We have to do it.
I like it. Be the ball.
Be the ball.
Let's hear it for Molly. All right, we're going to do Q&A in just 1 second. We want to bring up somebody special, so Suzanne's going to come up.
Yeah, we have Suzanne Shepherd, our graduate of our program.
Love the fact that you were a student, similar to David. You did it, you drank the Kool-Aid, and now you're making Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I came back.
And why?
So I was very fortunate to be taught by all these people, so it's been really interesting hearing all their gems, because I'm like, ooh, yeah, I had a little bit of that.
You get to go in the teacher's lounge now.
Yeah, I can go in the teacher's lounge. Yeah, it's fun.
How great is that? There's nothing in there, right?
Yeah, no, it's really not as exciting as it sounds, is it? But I had the luxury of being able to do a residency and fellowship, a residency in pediatrics, and then a neonatology fellowship, and I practiced at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia for several years. And I've recently come back to upstate New York, and I'm doing a mix of early intervention and school-based therapies, and I'm lucky enough to be able to share what I've learned with these guys, yeah, and be able to learn from them as well.
Do you guys learn a lot? Real world? Yeah. So I just wanted to ask you, so what made you want to come back to a place that you went to school? You know, what was the driving force? Yeah, let's go back.
For me, it was being able to come back to where was home. Being able to give a little bit of what I got from all of these people and be able to give that back to them, because I wouldn't be where I am. I wouldn't have done any of the cool things I've been able to do in my short career if it wasn't for these people pushing me along the way.
So that's cool. I like to bring on a student usually whenever we go to a school, because I want to hear it from, and you had a unique, you know, experience, yeah, student, and now, you know, coming back, same with some of the other colleagues. That's a good sign.
Yeah.
That's definitely a positive sign. So let's hear it for one of you guys who left and came back. Awesome. You guys ready for Q&A? Yeah. That guy's got to have a good question, because he's been, I don't even know who you are, but I like you. You guys can shout it out and I'll repeat it so the audience at home can hear it. So is there anything that you want to ask, and we'll have all the guys on stage answer it pretty quickly, but what do you want to know from these guys up here? Because now they have to answer, because the lights and the microphones and everything, they have to answer whatever you want. What do you want to dig in with? Okay, so for the people at home who couldn't hear it, what was your name?
Nick.
Nick? Yeah. Nick did a rotation in pediatrics for 12 weeks, heard from a bunch of people that said, hey, you're a guy in pediatrics that's a little unique. Why is that such a great experience? Did I get your question? Okay, good. So this was impressed upon me, because I didn't know why that was either. I worked at a peds clinic in the DC area. Mine was, the divorce rate is 50%. Okay, just off the top. The divorce rate's 50% in America. If you have a child with disabilities, that divorce rate goes through the roof. So most of the kids that I was seeing only had one parent at home, and typically it was the mom. So they didn't get to have, this was impressed upon me by my mentor in peds, Amy O'Malley, was they didn't have a male figure at home a lot, so they were missing out on that. So to have me I mean, I chased him with Nerf gun. I mean, I made him sweaty. I left a lot of kids leaving that clinic super sweaty because I wanted to push them. So that was the reason it was a lot of the moms requested to have the dude. They just referred to as the only guy there. Can my son or daughter work with the dude, because they were kind of missing out on that? So do you see something similar? How would you respond to that? He was saying how he's so unique. He's in peds because he's a dude, and the parents were super psyched to have him work with their children. Why is it so rare? Why is it such a good experience to have a male peds PT?
I think there's also a slightly different approach that a male has too, where a female in this situation tends to have like a very motherly approach, independent, obviously, if they have a child or not. Whereas you guys are there to play. You're ready to roughhouse a little bit and really push them to the extreme. And not that that isn't the heart of our goal, but I think we sometimes have rose-colored glasses on and look at it a little differently.
Okay, I like that. Cool. Thank you for your question. That's a good question. And it was the first question, so it's the icebreaker question. And the other ones are just going to flow. I can feel it. Who's got one? Who wants to know something from their professors?
Biggest challenge as an early clinician.
Biggest challenge as an early clinician. Who wants to take this one first? Will everybody answer?
Realizing I don't know it all. And even though I passed the boards, I still have a lot of questions. And then finding who your resource is to go and get help. And knowing that it's okay to keep asking them even when they want to shut their door because you've asked them 3 million questions.
Yeah. Good.
I think it is confidence. You can have great GPA, you can do well in your clinicals, but when you're out there, that first moment where this is my patient, this person is my responsibility, and this rehab process is going to be designed by me, it takes some experiences to gain that confidence. And the only way you get it is to start doing it. Having resources, having good people around you is really critical, because that helps to give you the confidence, because if you don't have the answer, you got somewhere to go. And that makes that first job so critical, because it's not where you are, it's who you're with.
So I graduated 30 years ago, so I don't know if I really remember what it was like back then. But the one thing I do remember is that when I first graduated, I thought I knew this much. And now I realize I knew about this much. And even now, I probably only know about this much. So you got to keep learning and you got to keep reading.
I think one of the challenges was, and I did pediatrics, it wasn't my first job, it was my second job. I did preschool for 3 years, and it was a very different setting from any place else that I had worked before or since then. And I think one of the challenges was, the physical therapy part of it's part of it, but the rest of it is like the job part of it. So like how is it has a part of this system you work in the whole system. And I think that's the same for every job, but that really came to light for me when I worked in pediatrics.
I think I would piggyback off of what Gabby said, is that when I took my first job, I had no earthly concept of how much I didn't know, and I was absolutely flabbergasted. I was exhausted for the first, I'm going to say, 12 to 18 months. And I said, oh, my good Lord. I was also very, very fortunate that, I didn't plan this out. I'm not some kind of master planner. I was fortunate that my first position was in a place that had culture and values of education and camaraderie and mentorship. And just like I said, you couldn't pass a clinical there easily. You didn't stay an employee there if you didn't go to rounds, if you didn't go sit in the bone room and go through x-rays with residents, if you didn't do this, if you didn't demonstrate competency in different areas. And that structure is very similar to what our modern residencies are like. I had it because that was the culture and the values of the institution I went to. So I really am lucky that I had that experience, and that's why I really try to push people to really consider that first position. It's critical. If I hadn't had that kind of shaping during my formative years as a PT, I would never be able to go up to that line the way I can right now. Just wouldn't be able to do it.
All right, we got time for one more great question. No pressure, no pressure. Who's got one more for their professors?
What do you hate most about PT?
What do you hate most? Yes. I like it. What? Oh, and here's the thing. They're like, that's easy. Got it.
Billing.
Documentation.
Oh.
And I teach it now.
Paperwork. The same.
Billing, obviously. I actually love documentation because that
maybe
allows
she
me
can teach
to
it now.
Show.
they took it away. They took it away. Because that is where I get to communicate to the world what we bring to the table as a profession.
Want to thank our sponsors, Arias Medical Staffing, for bringing us out here. I want to thank the faculty for taking some time out and putting themselves out there. Thank you guys very much. I want to thank the staff here at Utica College. You guys made it super easy and awesome. This facility is fantastic, so thank you guys. And thanks to the audience for taking some time out on a Friday night and hanging with us. Now, grab yourself a pint glass and let's go have a drink. Thanks, guys.
The PT Pintcast is a product of PT Pintcast, LLC.
It is hosted and produced by PT Pintcast CEO, Jimmy McKay, and CBO, Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it.
This has been another pour from the PT Pintcast.
The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.